Look at you with your little blue outfit on.
Yeah, I just came from acupuncture. I've been doing acupuncture.
To try to sweat?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying everything at this point.
Where are they hitting you with the needles?
Well, first they went into my thumbs and feet, and now he's in my belly button and my shoulders and my head. And I've been drinking these teas that he's giving me that are super nasty. But, and I'm down to 2.5 milligrams of my Lexapro, down from 20. And I think I'm starting to sweat a little bit, like on my forehead this weekend. It was kind of there. I mean, I was like, oh shit, is this happening? Finally, I might be turning a corner. I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but shit might be happening. I don't know. I don't know.
And this is from the medicine man person you're going to? This is from the holistic guy who's hitting you with needles and giving you tea?
Maybe. Here's the thing. If I get off of this Lexapro and then I start sweating again, it will coincide with how it worked out 20 years ago, where I got off Celexa and I started sweating. So maybe this is what the problem is.
No.
SSRIs. But even ahead of that, or even aside from that, it's just a wake-up call to get healthy. I've hit rock bottom.
What does that mean?
I've just been drinking too much. You know, I've been dipping a lot of tobacco, smoking cigarettes. Yeah, it's just I haven't been a healthy person where normally I am. You know, I mean, this lack of not being able to sweat and overheating, I'm not able to work out. I'm not able to just be the healthy person that I usually am. So once I hit that slope, it gets slippery, and then I fall into the fucking hell and just abusing myself with substances that are not, you know, cocaine and fucking heroin, but just tobacco and dip and liquor and...
And weed, and say it.
And, no, because I will never stop doing that. That's not a problem. You know what I mean? That's not affecting.
And you're to me. You, but I'm telling you.
Oh God, you are so old school. When are you going to grow up? When are you going to grow up? You're a 51-year-old man.
Of the two of us sitting on this call, I sweat. I
sleep.
That
has nothing to do with marijuana.
How do you know? Don't you have
because
to start eliminating things? So you're going to cut out your antidepressant.
Yeah.
You're going to continue to smoke weed.
Yeah.
And you're going to hope that that's the... And you got to start somewhere, so I get it. But you think that's what's going to unlock the dam and you're going to start beating up right away?
Well, I'm doing everything that
I
can. But I'm not... But
you're not stopping
about
weed.
Marijuana. It's not
How
about
you know?
That. Because I know...
You don't know what it's about at all. You don't. No, you don't.
I know
you
that it's
know.
Not about weed.
You just don't want it to be about weed.
No, dude. I don't know, dude. I just, you know. Am I talking to Joe Buck or Jack Buck? Who am I talking to?
Well, hey there, Oliver. Enjoyed the podcast. Really love what you did on Scream Queens.
Yeah, you're talking to Jack right now. You know I'm just giving you shit. I want you to figure out somehow, some way.
No, I know.
To sweat. I feel like it's one of those psychosomatic situations where, and I'm not saying that's where it started, but now I feel like you're obsessing on it so much that you have the ability, I feel like, your mind... Mm-hmm. Your central nervous system or something, you have the ability somehow to kind of shut something down.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you, you know, because it has gotten into my head and there is anxiety that builds up around it.
Yeah.
And frustration and anger and all of it because it's been over a year now and it's gnarly, you know?
So if you work out, gnarly. If you ran a marathon.
Oh, I dropped dead at mile 4.
But that's because you're not able to sweat and therefore cool
your body. I can't perspire and cool my body down. Okay, I played golf 3 days ago, and it was hot. I was in the desert, and I knew I shouldn't be out, but I was like, fuck it, I really want to do it. And I got home, and it was scary. I was really dizzy. I was heavy panting, and my heart was beating fast. I jumped in a cold pool, and it took me all day and in through the night, maybe even the next morning to recover. You know?
Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad you're seeing all these different people. I worry about you because I know that you know that exercise is good for you. And if you feel like you can't have access to something that's good for your brain and good for your body, but I think is equally as good for your mind and your spirit and your soul, mm-hmm. and you can't do that, it's a big deal.
So, well, sometimes I think I can only speak personally, is I have to hit rock bottom sometimes to then pick myself back up. That's my personality. You know, I'll beat myself up until I'm like, okay, I can't take this anymore.
You can't take yourself beating yourself up anymore.
Yeah, right? And I've been meditating. I'm 5 days in a row, you know, which feels good. I've just been healthier. I stopped drinking. I'm trying to clean my shit up. That's all.
Do you have a place where you hang out when you hit rock bottom? Because I feel like you're there a lot. Do you have like a little condo down there, or
I go to Bikini Bottom with SpongeBob and Patrick.
Hey, SpongeBob. Hey there, SpongeBob.
I love SpongeBob. My kids are obsessed. My middle kid Bodie's obsessed with SpongeBob. He's seen, I think, every episode, and it is fantastic.
It's smart.
Really smart and really amazing.
So I reconnected with my uncle yesterday, had lunch with my mom's older brother. My mom's 81. I think my uncle's 83 or 84. And I had not seen him in forever. And my mom and he, there's some stress in their relationship. I'm pretty sure I know what the root of it is, but not probably appropriate for this podcast because they can't defend themselves. But let's just say they haven't had as close of a relationship as they should have had. And, you know, they have so much shared life experience. So I just reached out to him and I said, I really want to go to lunch with you. I always loved him. He reminds me of my grandfather, his dad, my mom's dad. And I had the best lunch with this 84-year-old guy who's just so funny and so sharp and has so many cool things to share and is a pilot and still works for the FAA and is just as crystal clear sharp as he's always been. And it was just nice. And it made me realize that sometimes, you know, your relationship with the older group in your family tree is reliant upon how they get along up there on those branches, because you end up getting the fallout of two people that don't really talk. So now you don't see him at Thanksgiving. You don't see him at Christmas. You don't see him at these other things. And you just drift apart. And I'm like, man, I've got a really close relative who's in his 80s and who I've always loved. I need to reach out and force a reunion, which I did. And it was so great. And then I texted you, Oliver. I was listening to the song Home by the Foo Fighters.
Like, I got cry, that
driving
text
down
from
the
you.
Highway, like crying, like thinking about my dad and thinking about how life was with my grandma and my grandpa, and that included my uncle. So that was just a good day, and it was nice to reconnect. And it was nice to see him so well. You know,
he said, but great. It's an important thing you said, you know, and it's true. You know, as far as the family tree goes, you know, those branches up high, when those are broken, sort of, you know, it's up to the younger people to try to reach up and reconnect, because you lose touch. If it's broken up here, how does it trickle down? You know, it's up to us or the people below to get curious and want to have a relationship, you know, and that's cool, man. I like that. So this uncle of yours, though, have you not talked to him or seen him in a long
time? So I've been married to Michelle for 7 years. He's never met Michelle. They live, it's kind of like you and your uncle. I could hit two drivers and hit their house. And that's how close they are to us in a small town. And he's never met Michelle, never met the boys, probably hadn't talked to him for a couple of years before I even met Michelle. So I, yeah, it's been almost a decade. And you know, his parents, so his mom, my grandma, lived with us for a long time. His dad, my grandfather, that's the one who played in the NFL, played for the Chicago Bears. He was like my dad. I mean, my actual dad traveled so much that my grandfather, my mom's dad, really raised me in a lot of different points in life and passed away when I was 15 or 16. So I have a real strong connection with this man's parents, my grandparents, and it brought a lot of that back, which I kind of been able to shut off. And it was just a very pleasant, easy lunch. Like, I don't know how you feel about potentially going to lunch with your dad.
Mm-hmm. I have. I've done it.
Yeah, but was the conversation strained, or were you worried about the conversation prior to? Like, what the hell am I going to talk about when we get there?
The first breakfast or brunch that I had with him was just getting through it. I mean, not getting through it meaning I was not wanting to be there. It was more on he was on the witness stand. I was just grilling him. We were getting shit out. Once that happened, then the second time we had lunch was sort of a bit boozy. We drank some beers and just were reminiscing, and then it was easy. You know, then it was easy, and it was crazy. He was emotional because he saw so much of himself in me, and vice versa. I saw so much of him and me, and it was so interesting. I mean, because I'm an adult now, or at least physically, and I've never experienced him as an adult, and he's never experienced me as an adult. And the similarities and the way that we think about life and the way that we go about things, it's fucking weird, man, when you don't have that person in your life who is genetically you, DNA, and now you almost see yourself. It was strange. It was very strange, honestly.
That stuff's all in there. Even with my uncle. I mean, we have a stand that, like, if he's standing still for a while, he'll cross his one leg in front over his other leg. And that's how I stand if I'm standing for a while. And I have a lot of he and I are very similar, similar DNA. I see a lot of similar traits. So that part of it was nice. But for you to have that much time go by to be able to recognize all those similarities is got to be mind-blowing.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, we text now and again, but it just lays there. That's just what it is at this point.
And that surprises me. I would think
25
like
minutes away, but we just, you know, I don't know. It's just the way it fucking
that
is.
That surprises me, though. And it's got to surprise you as a dad that once that line of communication is open, then I would think it would be, it's hard to open the line of communication, but once it's mm-hmm. open, and we've talked many times in the podcast how that got opened with you with a sarcastic Instagram thing on Father's Day, but how that thing started and you've had a couple of lunches, I would think that it shouldn't still be on you to be the one to initiate. He's got to be enough of an adult to know that it would mean a lot to you if he reached out to you regularly and checked in and came around and saw your kid. I mean, has he met your kids?
Yeah, he met them, which was really cool. But at the same time, I don't expect that of him. You know, I mean,
do you listen to his podcast? Is his podcast out?
I don't know if it's. I don't even know. He
you
wanted
can
me
get
to
know
it.
Your dad through his podcast.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's who he is. It's just who he is, and I respect who he is, and I don't take it personally, so it doesn't hurt me. I don't get upset that we have opened this door and he's not sort of stepping through.
God, it's so nuts to me.
I don't care. I know who he is and it's okay. You know, I honestly see a little of myself in him. I'm sort of selfish. I was talking to Aaron about this just getting deep on sort of who I am and my life. And, you know, we have these fun, deep conversations sometimes. And I was, I'm selfish. I'm a selfish person. I want to do what I want to do. And sometimes that sacrifice for others is difficult. You know, if I want to go play golf, I'm going to figure out how to do it. And I will, you know, say whatever I need to say, do whatever I need to do to play that game, to play that round of golf. I definitely sacrifice for my kids, and I do what I have to do, but I want to do what I want to do. I'm a selfish man.
Well, I think we all are to some degree. And then it's how much are you willing to give up of that to, I mean, are you really in a position where you're making somebody else happy, or are you just kind of appeasing that other person? It's hard. That's what happens in a marriage. That's what happens where you're giving up a part of your freedom, and you should give up a part of your selfishness. And then you have kids and you give away more of your selfishness, where you feel like, I always have, I'm there for the group. Like, I'm there. What do you need? I'm here. I will get it done for you. And, I'm going to put myself second or third. And I don't say that trying to act like I'm a better person than I am. I'm not saying it for that reason. But I think that's the part it's never made sense to me with your dad or dads. You know, it's the same with my daughters and their grandfather from my ex-wife. You know, there was no relationship there. But you can see when they do run into each other, both parties really want a relationship, but nobody will take the actual steps to work at it and foster some sort of understanding and parameters for a relationship. So that part of it has just never made sense to me. And it still doesn't make sense. And I know it doesn't make sense to you, and it's got to be hurtful on some level with you, the kind of dad you are, and what you would lay down on train tracks for all three of your kids with no questions asked. And you're not asking a lot out of your father, just a little bit of a reach out.
He does, though. He does. I mean, he'll shoot me a text here and there, and, you know, he's not gung ho about trying to see me. But the thing is, I hit him up, and I'm like, we need to hang. Let's do it. And he goes, yeah, let's do it. And then neither of us follow up. We're like two peas in a pod, in a way, you know.
Well, all right. As long as you're good with it, I would love for this podcast, along with making, you know, tens of dollars, I would love for this podcast to somehow reconnect you in a meaningful way to your father and have
this
him.
It's all a buildup, man. It's all a buildup for our season finale when Bill Hudson comes on the show and we just hash it out, man. We just got to wait for a few more dominoes
to fall. Oh,
no, just more listeners. You know, I mean, we need to build from 18 to maybe 35, and then I'm ready to.
Okay, but here's what you know, like it would be if I was in that situation. I have a sister, I have a mom. You know, if I'm reaching out to somebody who's estranged, you know, you have to also cross all those T's, dot all those I's, and make sure everybody's okay with you. In essence, using this forum to air out family grievances or trying to get some understanding of your father. And that's not everybody's going to be into that. So that's another layer to this that you've got to manage and make sure everybody's okay with on your side of the fence before you reach across to do something publicly with him.
Yeah. Well, I guess, but it's me. It's my shit. I don't need permission. You know what I mean?
Clip that. Margo, Josh, clip that right there. we're gonna run that until the tape wears out. I don't need permission. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
No, I don't. Who am I gonna ask permission of? You know, I'm not allowed to talk to my father without getting clearance from my family.
Yeah, but on a podcast, I mean, could there be a less real way to talk to somebody? Not that we're not gonna do that with John Stamos, who is checking in on the Zoom call.
The thing is, though, sometimes with the microphone in front of your mouth, you're able to say things, you feel a little bit more comfortable, you know?
That's,
I mean, you're
true,
able
maybe
to be a little bit more vulnerable. So a podcast, maybe that's the fucking space to get it done. Maybe that's where dads and sons and dads and daughters need to come heal.
Maybe that's why there's been such a boon in podcasts. People are actually trying to reconnect with their children or their parents, or yeah, so that's what it takes.
Or other things. I don't know. Who knows?
I hope John, who checked in and now checked out, knows that.
Yeah,
you know, we don't really do like a formal "Here's Johnny" introduction.
No, you just don't be afraid, Stamos. Just
jump in.
Don't be scared, man. It's, you know what? I gotta pee.
Oh well, I'll talk to John while you go pee. I'll time
you.
I'm
gonna go pee. Yeah, time me.
What's the flow thing? What's the medicine that helps with your flow?
Flomax.
Flomax. There he is.
I mean, not that I know, but I mean, I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, none of us need Flomax yet.
I was thinking of singing a Hudson Brothers song while he pees.
He'll make him start to weep.
Yeah.
He's cried on this podcast, John, just so you know.
He's going to cry soon.
The Hudson Brothers, dude. So you are a star.
Yeah. I love them. I'm sorry.
Nobody knows you like I do.
Yeah.
Lucky Margolis, wasn't that a character or something on there too?
Yeah, they had. You know what? I've never seen one episode of their variety show. Not one.
Share the Zoom and I'll show you some of their highlights.
I should probably check it out, you know. I don't know why. Maybe it's some emotional block.
Let me just, let me put this nice mic up. I thought maybe we would.
No, we're good.
Let me find some headphones. Hey, Oliver. Yeah.
I didn't know that you two did scenes together in Scream Queens. I just found that out before you hopped on. That's very cool.
Let's save it for the pop.
Okay.
So this is. You guys should just use this only.
trust me, this is staying in, but we have no structure to this.
If it stays podcast. In, then I'll never listen to this again. I don't listen to it now, but I'll tell people not to listen.
It's not staying in.
Yes, it is.
No, Josh gets upset because then people rip him.
People comment and say they complain.
Yeah, but Josh, you got to let go of your ego, Josh. This isn't about you, man.
Yes, it is. It's entirely about me.
Don't ask. Just take it out. Just take it out.
I like the in-between.
You live in the taint.
I
daddy issues. Living in the taint.
Living in the taint.
Hi, guys.
Hey, it's John Stamos. How are you?
Can we tell the audience? I mean, if you're not going to play what just happened, we got to tell them. I mean, Oliver had to take a pee, and he brought the mic in there with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I did.
We started to get into
My dad. We started to get into the Hudson Brothers. I've never seen an episode, not one.
So both your parents, Oliver, have each had variety shows.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Who can
My
say
mom
that?
Did a couple. She did a couple. One with Liza Minnelli and the Muppets.
And Laughing.
And Laughing. I forgot about that.
My favorite thing your mom did. I think I showed you, Oliver. Did I ever when she was on the Dean Martin show with Dean, and they were doing a song about the Dum Dum Club. It was so beautiful.
Yep.
Loved it.
Well, you're a Disney file. I mean, were you into Kurt Russell?
Well, not the way you make it sound, but I liked it. Into Kurt Russell, like him.
Well, I'm just thinking, because Disney file, right? Kurt, and then Elvis. Sure. Kurt played Elvis.
I know, so great. He was the best Elvis.
He was great.
He's a good guy, huh? So he was really your dad, right?
Yeah, he. I mean, he raised me. He was in my life at six or 7 years old, and he's the one who sort of made me into what I am, good and bad.
Yeah, and he just told us before he got on, John, that he's finally hit rock bottom.
I've been drinking it too much, and I've been chewing too much tobacco and smoking cigarettes, and I've been on a bit of a slide. So I finally hit bottom, and now I'm working my way back up. Acupuncture, eating right. I'm trying to get my shit together. You know,
you sober up a little bit. You sober up. I had to.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a problem, but it was just an everyday thing. and I was using.
How is that
it.
Not a problem? Every day I couldn't stop drinking. It wasn't a problem, but you know.
I guess it was a problem, but not in the sense of it was really fucking up my life, and I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic. You know what I mean? But I was feeling terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
And so I had to pull myself back up.
Good for you.
You're a healthy man, though.
Well, I had it 5 years ago. I hit the bottom too, and I was like, fuck. And I used to dream about having kids, and I'm like, I'm never going to have a kid like this. You'd lay in your bed and recover for a few days before having to go on camera. And I go like, what if I had a kid right now? Like, that wouldn't work. Mm. And now that I do, and he's turning 3 in a couple of weeks, you got to really be helped. Although I got to ask, I need a lot of advice from you guys, but 2 nights in a row, he didn't sleep. So I've slept zero, you know, the last couple nights. But.
How great is it though? How great is it being a dad though? I mean, I know it's he's 3 and you've had 3 years to, but isn't it fucking, it's just incredible. I mean, I have 3 kids.
I know. I want to ask you guys so many questions, and I'm going to say first two. Man, you look great, Oliver. Anyway, and Joe, I didn't really know you, but I listened to a bunch of podcasts last night with you guys, and you're really funny. You have great chemistry, and I like how you take the piss out of each other.
It's a weird mix, and I don't really know. I was friends with his sister before him. Now she won't take my calls, so I end up doing a podcast with Oliver, and we are definitely different people who enjoy each other's company so much. And, you know, it's funny for you, John. You know, you and I, we're now dads. I am for the second time, but in our 50s, our kids, so I have twin boys that were born 11 days after your son, Billy. And so I'm almost 52.
Right.
And I got to tell you, my patience level, maybe it's because I've done it before, but my patience level is about a 2.
Really?
On a scale of 0 to 100. I'm a good dad. I'm a good dad. But hey, it's a lot.
I think if I would have had kids when I was younger, my patience level would have been at a 2. Now I'm just like, okay, what, you know, burn the house down. I don't give a shit. I mean, all day long, the kid is trying to kill himself or kill me or my wife. Is that what you, I mean, he's on a suicide mission. Uh-huh. Last week, this is a studio in here. He'll find whatever the most dangerous thing is. There was a guy over here helping me do a speaker thing, and we looked over, and he had not one, but 2 screwdrivers going right into the socket.
Oh,
and
good.
I saw a tiny little, and I threw them back, and blah, blah, but it's good. here's what I realized the most. I was thinking about this morning. Now I know why there's so many fucked up people in this world, because it's much harder than I thought. And my wife does 90% of it, right? I mean, you know, it takes so much patience, as you say.
Oh, that's so true. And I'm glad you said that, because it's so crazy frustrating sometimes. I had to put my first son down. He was crying so much.
Put him down like a horse? Like shoot him or something? What do you mean?
That's what I thought. Did you at least bring the curtain
down.
Out?
No.
You brought the curtain out.
I had to put him on the bed and surround him with pillows because I just needed a break. I was like, all right, I got to put you down now because I need to walk away for a second.
Yeah. And Joe, what about the terrible 2s and like, are your boys going through that?
Yeah, but I feel like it's 3s are going to be a little bit more intense. I mean, and having twins, I mean, imagine your situation times 2.
Yeah.
And so on one hand, it's great because they have each other to play with and really interact with. And it's not all on mom and dad at this point, but man, it's they fight like crazy, and it's become really physical. And one of my twins is like a foot taller than the other one, and they go at it, and it's just not a fair fight. I try to step in the middle of it and help the little one a little bit, but shit, when my bigger twin runs at me at 3 years old, I get scared. So I don't know what to say other than having daughters back in my late 20s, early 30s, and now having these boys. It is an entirely different experience. Yeah. Not just because of me, but raising boys and raising girls, 2 different things, and these boys are just full energy, and I was not expecting that. you like conversations with talented actors like on today's episode, go check out the Daddy Issues archives and listen to our conversation with the incredibly talented Josh Duhamel, where we discuss everything from parenting to hot yoga to sports, divorce, outdoor activities, which is divorce, and so much more. So the obvious question, Josh, is how's life? How are you getting along during this pandemic?
I'm sanding my deck right now. I'm almost done. I should be done today. We're going to replace a few screws, and then we're going to start staining it tomorrow. So that's something.
Oh, that's good.
Something. What about you, Joe?
I don't know that you could give a laundry list of things you're doing that could make me feel like less of a man. I'm
Don't go anywhere. Just a bit outside. Tried the corner and missed. We'll be back after this short break with more from today's guest, John Stamos.
What do you guys do? And I didn't catch it on the 4 or 5 podcasts I listened to last night. I just heard a lot of Ernie Borgnine talk and, you know, weird shit. But what's discipline?
I mean, Joe reference.
Yes.
You guys went on about Ernie Borgnine. It was very funny.
Yeah. Thank you.
What's the discipline? Like, what do you do? I mean, you can't, and I don't mean this as a joke, and people laugh when I say, you can't hit them. I mean, I was spanked. I don't know what you guys did, but no, I just can't.
I was hit with a belt.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was spanked.
And what do you do with the kid? Like, where's the, do we try the timeout thing? The other day I said, that's it. I'm taking these toys away. And he just kind of watched me take them out to the garage. No, nothing. And so
No reaction.
I went and found the ones he loved, these little dinosaurs, took them out. And as I'm taking him out, he goes, here, daddy, and grabs some more. Here, take these two, little smartass. I don't know if he was fucking with me or he was just trying to, you know. But what do you do? I mean, what do you do?
I don't know. I say that all the time to my one son loves lions. I'm like, if you don't do whatever I'm asking you to do at this moment, I'm going to take all your lions away. Do you want that? Yes. Okay. All right. How about if you want to go sit in your bed? Okay. There's no, so I fight gently with my wife about this all the time. Like, she is very, let them explore. Let them draw on their leg with a marker and all that. And I'm like, no, just if they don't hear no from you, they shouldn't hear no the first time they're out in the real world. Right. They need to hear no from mom and dad, and they want boundaries.
I definitely have a different way, I think, than most LA parents these days do it. You know, I believe in discipline. I think that they crave structure. I think that they 100%. Unconsciously want to be disciplined. I had no, when I went into parenting, I did not say, I'm never going to spank. But I am not that person. I've never spanked my kids. I've never felt an inclination to ever spank my kids. But I do believe in discipline. I believe in structure. I don't believe in, how did that make you feel? You know, I'm like, no.
But what is it? What's the consequence?
The discipline for me, here's what I will say. However you do it, I think that consistency and follow through is extremely important. There's so many false threats. If you don't do this, then you're not going to get this. And then, of course, you give them whatever the fuck they want.
Right.
The follow through is huge. So they learn to respect you and understand that when you say something, you mean it. And it's going to have consequences. You know, there's a lot of empty threats rolling around, and that just... That doesn't do the trick, you know.
God bless my wife, because she reads books, she listens to books on tape, and then she has this since the COVID, we had these sort of little preschool going on over here 3 days a week, which is really sweet, and they've taken over the garage now, the garden, but and then she does this Raya class, Raya technique. Have you guys heard of that? Am I saying it right? It's very much like, how did that make you feel? And she made me sit in on it. And I, again, like, it's another tool in the toolbox. And I think it's, I don't know if it's working yet, but some kid threw a bottle at Billy's head. It was plastic. And they're like, how did that make you feel? I said, how the fuck do you think it made him feel?
Somewhere, John, our dads are laughing.
Totally. I felt like I was in a sitcom. I'm sitting there with these hip parents, and they're like, Don't tell them you're proud of them. Ask them if they're proud of themselves.
God, see, I can't stand that stuff. Well, I can't stand it. I respect that. I think that we are emotionally evolved people, I think, from 50 years ago, just generally. And I think it's important that our kids are free to express emotions and talk about how they feel.
Yes.
But when it comes to certain things, it's not about how you feel. I mean, let's get real. When a kid hits you with a bottle, I don't give a, I'm not going to talk it out. I'm gonna confront you, and I'm gonna act accordingly.
I don't want to put that thing down because there's some good stuff that I've learned from it,
of course.
Of the stuff is working, you know, and it's mainly, you know, a lot of it is just don't yell, and so we try not to yell, but then sometimes you know I yell.
How were you disciplined as a kid? Like, how were you raised, and do you want to emulate that? I mean, you obviously loved your dad. Can you take from what he did with you guys and sort of put that into your practice?
Yes. I just don't remember, you know, how he was when we were this little. I don't remember getting, I mean, maybe a little bit of that, but discipline. My dad owned a fast food place, and I worked there, you know, from 13 years old on. And in fact, I was working there on Sundays, and I was supposed to, he wanted me to go to college. I wasn't a student, man. I couldn't, you know, deal with anything. And I went to sign up at the local college, Cypress College, to that room where you sign in. But I couldn't find the room. So I came home. I said, he said, next semester, you got to go to college, take business course. Cause he wanted me to, you know, take over the restaurant. I said, okay. And then I was like, I got to get on TV. And I got on General Hospital, and I started working on, and at the time, 81, it was the, you know, it was a gigantic show and everybody watched it. But my dad made me still come in on Sundays. I was a Sunday guy, and I still worked there for about 3 months after I was working during the week. The show was on air. I said, Dad, I'm famous. I got to go. But it was discipline, time, you know, boundaries, all that stuff. My parents are both gone now. And I just, it's the saddest part for me is that you know, that I can't ask them some of these questions, you know, because.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. But did you have freedom as a kid, though? Did you have freedom to roam and explore and do the things that you know, wanted to do and get in trouble and all those things?
I yes, for sure. But I wasn't, I had, I was, I went, you know what saved me? I always went to bed at around 8:30, nine, you know, like 9 o'clock was really late for me. So it kept me out of trouble for the most part.
Wow.
And I just love being around my parents. I love, you know, it was later that I got, you know, that I slipped away. Later, as time goes on and more success was happening and kicks keep getting harder to find, as you know, right, Oliver, that the line just keeps being pushed, discipline, the, you know, knowing your lines, drinking the night before, drinking at work, you know, all that shit just started to take away. And it got embarrassing for me because I wasn't that guy that my parents raised or my dad. The one thing that they did that I'll never forget, and I really will try to do this with my sons, like, there was no boundaries. Like, I wanted to be an actor. They didn't go, you can't do it. You got to have an agent. You got to have, you know, there's the, okay, great, go. And I just never thought there was nothing in the way. I just did it. Like, you know, I was very, very lucky. But once I got in, I had the discipline, you know, that my dad instilled in me and my mom, and boundaries and respect. And I went in wanting to learn as much as I could. And, you know, all those things. But my dad, you know how people, I was thinking he was the best man at my first wedding, and he was like my best friend. And I, you know, that moment where you look at your parents, and you go, oh, they're just a human. He's not a superhero. He's not all that stuff. That never really happened for me, for my dad. He was the coolest motherfucker, you know?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
God, that's exactly, my dad was my best man at my first wedding. My dad was my best friend. Right. I mean, now he broadcast for the, who, me?
Yeah. What? You guys, great. I'm happy for you. I wish I had that. Keep going, Joe.
Well, you got, what about one of the other Hudson brothers? He had two. Are they still alive? Those other guys?
Sorry to interrupt, but I know I'm honestly
Uncle Mark
for both of you. I have my Uncle Mark and my Uncle Brett. My Uncle Mark is a songwriter who lives down the street from me.
Oh, yeah,
and
that's
I discovered that in the most crazy way, but coincidentally, he lives 300 yards from my house, which is crazy.
Wow.
So we've connected a lot. We talk and text, and I'm much closer with Uncle Mark than I am my dad right now.
Wow. Right.
But I love hearing you guys talk about that, and it gets me misty because I am so grateful that my kids get to have that in me.
Yeah, right.
They do.
And at, this, And at the same time, you know, there is a sense of wonder of about sort of who I would be, I guess, if I had that, if my dad was my best friend. Kurt is an amazing human being. I consider him my father. But you know, when you're talking about biology, it's a whole different ball game.
How old were you when Kurt came around?
I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Right.
He immediately said to us that he will always be there. Even if him and my mom don't work out, he will never, ever be out of our lives and will always be that person. So that gave us a lot of security, you know. But it's different. It's different when it's your biological father and your stepdad, even though he's come in and played that role, you know.
But he was there all the time for you, right? And all the good things about
Without a doubt.
So you were just wondering, what if I had that from my biological dad? Maybe it wouldn't be as good, right?
I mean, who knows? You know, the dad. Fuck, man. It's always the what if. It's the sliding doors, right. I guess. But, right. You know, I'm just happy that I can be that for my kids. You know, you can go two ways, right? My dad's dad bailed on him when he was 5 years old in the middle of the night. My dad, you know, sort of did what he did, and I needed to break that cycle. And I remember a young kid thinking, I do not want to do that to my children. And that has stuck with me, you know? So hopefully
what more could you ask for, Oliver? That's it, man.
John, did you make a conscious decision not to have kids in your earlier years, or were you just rolling doing your life and that's just the way it was?
No, I did. It wasn't a con. No, I always wanted kids. I always wanted family. It didn't work out with my first marriage. Then I went rogue for 10 years, you know, way too many years. And luckily I met Caitlin, my wife now, who was just, you know, who's everything that I'd ever wanted in a wife and a mother. And Joe, I don't know your situation that much, but I'm sure your dad's really proud of you. Yeah. And I'll bet you too, Oliver, like you don't talk to him at all, right?
Oh yeah. No, I do now. We've reconnected. And it's been a couple years now. It's a lot of texting. We've seen each other a few times, but it's been good. It's something, you know.
Great,
that's
great.
And I know, man. It's like I know he's proud of me. I know he looks at me and sees me and gets emotional. And I know he has regrets. And I know that he wishes that he could have been someone that he wasn't capable of being. And that's why I have the ultimate forgiveness and compassion for that man, because he didn't have the fucking tools to deal with his trauma, right? I was lucky enough to build a toolbox of sorts, right? So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with him being
and
who
he was
is.
In his he was it, kind of what I was saying earlier. He was in his 20s probably when he had you, right? Getting famous and you know.
Yep.
And I'm sure there was substance abuse going on back then with his, you know, somebody. And that's good that you could tell that. My dad was great about of keeping me humble too. Like it wasn't like, you know, these parents, you know, I said that they didn't put obstacles in my way because they didn't, but my dad was my friend, this encapsulates my dad great. My friend told me this story the other day. He said, you know, when you got famous, I was sitting there with your dad and I said, boy, Johnny could get any girl he wants. And my dad said, well, not any girl. Come on. You know, I mean, I'd come home from like doing these car shows with, you know, with a bag of cash, right? Just, you know, been on TV or something. And I'd come home and I lived at my parents' house, you know, well into my 20s. I come home and I'd say, so look at that. I made 10 grand at this car show, you know, and I have a bag of cash. He'd say, great. Now go clean up the dog shit in the backyard and, you know, we'll get back to it later. Mm-hmm, it was that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's such a gift though. And I had that in some ways with my dad. My dad was not hovering over me saying, well, here's how I would have called that home run, or here's where you made mistakes tonight. Here's how I want you to broadcast. He just let me find my own way. He helped me, you know, so many doors were opened because I was his son, but he really even left the platitudes and the compliments. He would say them to everybody else, but me. And I knew how he felt, but that was enough for me. But it wasn't like, oh, okay, Dad, I know. Yeah, that's how you would have done it. And that was the best thing he could have done. And I think that was his way of kind of letting me stumble and stay humble and all those things that rhyme with humble.
It's cool. It's almost cooler when you hear it from someone else saying, "Oh God, your dad was bragging about you the other day, boy."
Well, I heard an old interview that he did with a guy, and he had been dead for 10 years. And I heard it for the first time. My sister found it, where he was being interviewed by this radio host, and he said the best thing about my boy is he's better than I ever was.
Wow.
And he's a nice guy, and those who work with him love him. And wow, that's best great. Thing. And he almost got into it with the host, because the host wasn't like totally agreeing with him. And he's like, "Would you quarrel with that?" And he said, no. He said, but he's doing bigger and better things than I ever did in my career. And to hear that 10 years after he died, I mean, I was a puddle listening to that.
How come you're not crying right now, though? Like, while you're,
because I'm more stable than you are. Mm-hmm. I have a more solid foundation.
You know, I couldn't help but thinking that, like, the minute John comes on, I feel like you've been checking out his hair this entire time, Joe.
I've been touching it too much too.
No, because it's so fucking good. I mean, I have good hair. There's no doubt. But right. Joe has a hair fetish. Like, he's got issues with it.
But, yeah, like if I was a surgeon and I was doing hair restoration, crazy. Which I personally have done hair plugs, hair restoration 8 times in my life.
Oh, that looks good, man.
Yeah, I mean,
let's see. That's good.
I'm going to go again, but I would put your head, and I would ask for permission. But that's like the after shot for. That's what everybody hopes for. It's unbelievable.
Oliver is, I'm not a sports guy. We could talk about that a little bit because I'm playing a coach in this new TV show.
Yeah, yes.
But is Joe, and I asked my friend last night, but is Joe as good as his dad or better or what kind of?
I'm not an authority there. I didn't listen to Jack Buck. I don't know. All I know is that he was a Hall of Fame broadcaster. You know, right. Joe is more national. I mean, Joe has definitely exceeded probably. You know, I would say his dad for sure. I think more people probably hate Joe though than hated his dad. If that says anything,
because when you do national games, you do national games and you're not there for either side. Everybody thinks when you get excited for a home run, the team that just gave up the home run gets pissed at you, the fans, because they think you're rooting for the other side. It's just not a. It's not a. It's like you're not in our camp. You're not in their camp. You suck, kind of a thing. But it's social media. Did I see
we're talking about? We're talking about baseball, right?
Yeah, it's a baseball thing. It's a baseball thing that I think.
My dad was so into sports, and I just didn't get it. I never liked it. I wanted to play with puppets and Matt, you know, and the games. And he was athletic, and there was a, you know, everybody would come. He's like, "You go out of your way to hate sports." I just did. Somebody had to. I hated. You know, somebody always had to lose, right? And I just didn't get it. And he was the golfer. He was like you guys. He was a great golfer. And I loved, as we talked, I loved my dad. And I wanted to play with him. I wanted to spend time with him. So I took golf lessons by myself. And then I said, "Dad, I'm ready. Let's go." And I wanted to be good. And we went out I grew up in Orange County. I can't remember it was in Cypress. And Tiger Woods played around there too. I don't know what, I can't remember. Anyway, and it was like, if you were over 90, you got in free that day. So there was like a lot of very nice women.
Sure. Yeah.
Two things happened. So I get up and I'm like, my heart's pounding. I got to be good for my dad. You know? And I hit it and I slice the ball and it flies by this 90-year-old woman's temple and misses her by a quarter of an inch. I would have killed this woman. I mean, it would have been, you know, "Hey, there's John Stein. Didn't he kill a golfing?" And then, so my dad was, so my dad hit it and he was yelling to the ball. He's like, "Sit down, bitch, sit down, bitch." And three ladies sat down, you know, sat there. But then he got in the car and said, "Let's never do that again." And I don't think we did.
The last time you played golf.
That was
a beautiful story.
When I got the call for this new show, Big Shot, it's David. You get an offer on this David Kelly show. I said, "Oh my god,
yeah,
love cool. David Kelly. I always want to work
with
him.
He's the man."
You know, do I play? Is it a lawyer? Is it one of those great, you know, things he's doing on HBO now? And they said, "This is basketball." And I was like, "Oh no!" Please tell me no. I'm not the player. Am I? And I said, "Well, we don't know yet." I'm like, "Oh, my heart just sunk."
Yeah,
and then I found out I was playing a coach, and you know, I dug it.
How did you deal with that, though? I mean, did you have to research and learn?
I did. I you know, because I don't watch sports ever, but I started studying Bobby Knight. My character throws a chair, and he gets kicked out of the NCAA, and I have to sort of work my way back up at an all-girls private high school in Laguna. And I go in just coaching them as I coach the boys, you know. I watched a lot of tapes. And then a friend of mine said, hey, you know, I'm friends with Jerry West. He's a really cool guy. You want to talk to him? I was like, great. I know you guys probably know him. And he said, you want to come down to you want to come hang out? And I said, because the season hadn't started yet. I said, oh, you guys are having a rehearsal? And he said, we call it practice, John. But and I went and I sat with him for hours at a Clippers practice. And I'm not even kidding, and I sound stupid here, but I thought they were a college team because I was playing a college. I don't know, but I guess they're not.
Wow. Don't play cards. Do not play cards with Jerry West, by the way. Oh, yeah, Let me give you that. Oh my God, he will fillet you. But it's funny. So I went to Indiana,
right,
when Bobby Knight was there as the head coach, and you know, I was into going to these college basketball games as a student, and I was there not long after he did throw the chair, which is in your show.
Yeah.
And when I noticed, so a game ends, but the players are off the court. They're tearing down. The equipment guys are getting to the bench, and the chairs, because it was Bobby Knight, had a chain that went through all the legs so that if he was going to throw one chair, he'd have to throw eight chairs. So the chairs were not loose anymore after he literally winged one across the court. So that may be something that you guys want to implement into Disney Plus and Big Shot. Is it David E. Kelly? David Kelly. Is it like Bobby De Niro when you work with him? It's not Robert De Niro. But I mean, this guy's like a genius in this space.
Prolific. Yeah. He is, and you know, and we have a really great showrunner too. There's Dean Laurie and Bill DeLee as the director. Because you know, David's not around much at all. But he but you know, there was this locker room speech that I had in the first episode, and it was just, I mean, I said, and you know, Oliver, when you're an actor, you kind of play around stuff. I said every syllable. It's hands down my favorite scene I've ever done. And I did talking about fatherhood, I did this in the last episode. So my daughter comes to live with me, and I'm a guy who wasn't a great father. I wasn't around. I'm divorced. I was into my career. And you know, he uses that excuse of like, well, I wanted to, you know, have a nice house for you, a nice school. It's like, bullshit. You did it for yourself. Not, you know, but he finally gets it after, you know, over the 10 episodes where he just, I got it. It's about sacrifice. It's about sacrifice. You know, I thought it was about spending time. I thought it was about discipline. It is. I thought it was about this and that, but it's sacrifice. It's sacrificing your own needs for your kid, right? And they said it great. He says, and at the end, you don't win a trophy or you don't get a ring, but if you do it right, you get a kid who's loving enough and smart enough and kind enough to be a better version of you. I thought, wow, that's right.
Yeah, no, it's great. And you know what you do it for is pride. And I'm feeling that more and more now.
Yeah,
the pride that I have in my kids when they're good kids. And I want to make, I don't care. Look, I want them to be smart and educated. But education for me is secondary to them being good human beings. You know, yes, I don't need A's. Right. I just need effort. And then I also need just be a good human. And when I have people come up to me and say, your kids are just so fucking great, the pride that I have goes well beyond any kind of career move I've made or anything that I've done in my life. And I think that is the trophy. That is the reward at the end of the day.
That's great, too, yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe we don't need David Kelly. Maybe you should come write some
speeches
for me.
I'm in, man. I'm in. Hey, let me come up. I'll do a guest spot, too. I'll be an opposite coach who's just really highly emotional and just crying on the sideline all the time.
We did. We had one of those coaches with Cameron Manheim. She played. Do you remember her?
Yeah, sure.
But you're welcome too.
Disney. What, have you been a Disney file all your life? And where did that come from?
I grew up near Disneyland in Orange County, and my childhood was there. And I used to, you know, I met girls there. I got turned on to music there. You know, that kind of stuff. I just loved the fan. And again, I wasn't escaping from a bad household or anything. When you walk through those gates, the rest of the world was gone, and you know, it was a fantasy, and it was, you know, maybe it was too, I was too Pollyanna with all that, but I just liked it. And then when I started to get some dough, it was right when eBay started, and the first thing they had put up, Disney was decided to get rid of some stuff. And the first thing they had on eBay was the sign outside of, did you guys go to Disneyland when you're kidding?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
that sign, that big blue sign that was on Harbor Boulevard, it's Disneyland, there, that was for sale. And the opening bid was 32,000, 36,000 or something. So I put that in, forgot about it. And like, and everybody wanted Michael Jackson. It was supposed to go for millions of dollars. And the last hour, I go, I wonder what happened to that thing. And I see I'm winning, and I refresh. I say, oh, shit, all my business. I got to get this. Each letter is 14 by 8 or something. And, you know, it's in my backyard now.
But, oh, for real? God. You got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And it's in your backyard. Like, what do you... It seems like a great idea until you get it.
Exactly. I had... I just moved out of Beverly Hills, but I lived there, and I wanted to put the D up. So I put it like behind a guest house, and I didn't think any, because I didn't want it to be, you know, seen or anything. And I didn't realize, like, from Laurel Canyon to Coldwater on Mulholland Highway, you could see a big D on the hill that says, you know, Dickhead lives there. but I don't have it up over here. But
oh my God. I mean, sell it. Sell it for $5,000.
Oh, well, no. I think it's worth more. Michael Jackson wanted it. He called me. I was on ER, and I got a message. And it was during the time when he was under a lot of, you know, fire for whatever he did or didn't do. And he said, "Hey, John, this is Michael. You know, I really dig your stuff," whatever that meant. And let's go to Disneyland someday, you know. And I remember playing it for the cast of ER. I go, "Fuck, come on, I'm not gonna go to Disneyland with it, you know."
But, but he was working you to get the sign?
Maybe.
Wow. That would look so much better behind you, Oliver, than what we typically see. You know, if you had the Disneyland sign behind you when we did this podcast?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Disney guy, I guess. You know, Kurt still is very involved with Disney.
Right.
You know, he would go there and do the candle lighting ceremony.
Yeah,
you know, he's still very involved.
Well, have you taken your kids, or has he taken
the kids? We've taken the kids and stuff, you know, for sure. That's the thing, too, is I wonder about kids during this pandemic. There's no socialization, you know, and it's really important, especially in the 2 and the 3, and you know, to actually be a part of someone else's life and to, you know, see other children and learn to interact. I mean, that is not happening, you know.
Luckily he does. Like like I said, 3 or 4 times a week, there's 10, 12 kids over here, and
good. You
know, everybody's masked up. Even the kids are wearing masks, which is sort of heartbreaking to watch. But I mean, I'm glad they do it. But
yeah.
He's really good. I mean, he's okay. I mean, he's, you know, there's, you know, you guys get it. He's a beautiful kid. He's super fucking funny. Like, he loves bits and shtick. Mm-hmm. He loves, but what scares the hell out of me, and I swear to you, I was like, please let me have a girl, please, because the sports thing is not going to be good. He'll take a stick off a tree and a berry, and he'll hit it perfectly, and he throws everything perfectly, and it's heartbreaking.
Your dad, your dad sent him to you. I'll teach this kid how to hit a golf ball. If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, and God, I prayed that you do, don't keep it to yourself. Share the love. Tell a friend about Daddy Issues. Go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay tuned. You don't want to miss the rest of our conversation with John Stamos coming up right after the break. Do you have anxiety around being a father? I mean, does it scare you in any way, or does it feel natural to you?
Feels very natural. Like, I've always wanted kids. I've been around kids all the time, but it's way harder than I thought. And I have nieces and nephews that I spend a lot of time with. It's just harder. I mean, it's just, and the anxiety comes from, it's a huge responsibility. As you say, like, everything we do, you know, they're affected by
what are you most worried about? Like, are you most worried about?
I'm worried about him. Yeah. I'm worried about him dying. Is that? And I don't mean that as a joke. I know what you mean. I asked a few friends, and they go, get it out of your fucking mind. Let it come in and then let it get out. I mean, what's stupid? He's not going to die. And hopefully, and you know, what are you going to do? Then you start worrying about yourself dying. Oh shit. Now, cause I used to feel pretty immortal. I'm sure you know that guys. Yeah, and you're like, I'm 57. I'm going to be around for,
Yeah.
But I don't overthink it, I guess. I don't know.
It's a great, it's actually a really interesting topic to bring up because I have that same thing. I worry about me dying too. I get nervous that, oh, if I'm not here, how are these kids going to turn out?
Right.
You know, and my wife has that. Aaron has that fear of them, sort of the kids getting into horrible accidents. I mean, that's a lot of stress for her, you know.
How old are you now? How old are your kids? Oh,
13, 11, and 7. Two boys and a little girl.
And weird names, right? All weird names, right?
What are they? Yeah, Wilder,
Bodie, and Rio.
Okay. How are they? Are they holding steady with those names?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Joe.
My kids are Blake and Wyatt. My kids are Blake, Wyatt, Natalie, and Trudy.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
Yeah,
good.
But that's
those are last.
Yeah, there's such there's going to be such pressure. Oliver, on when your you name a kid named, and your
Billy is my father's name too.
There you go.
Yeah. That was your dad's name, right, John?
Yeah. And that was one of the most beautiful things too. My wife was like, yes, of course, name him Billy. We'd love it. I'm like, oh, that means a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a strong LA name. In LA, other kids are gonna go, Billy.
Yeah.
There's Skylar talking to Owen talking to Billy.
Talking to Wilder.
Billy's cool.
Talking to Wilder.
Wilder's not too crazy.
Well, it is, but it's cool.
It's not really.
I think of Gene Wilder to me.
Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
That's right. Gene Wilder. You know,
there's kids
Bodie.
Over here named Jagger and
Bodie, I think of the Patrick Swayze character.
Right, from Point Break.
From Point Break.
Bodhisattva.
Yeah.
And then Rio, R-I-O, Rio.
I think of Duran Duran.
Right.
Exactly.
And Joe, you have your kid. And so how old are your daughters, Joe?
24 and 21.
So how's that? Were you?
That part, thank God. You know, I always like their friends. Who? My kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your daughters.
Yeah, they are. My youngest dates a kid in the NHL. My oldest is dating a 31.
Do you ever go there, Joe? I mean, do you ever picture like a man on top of your daughter? I mean, is that something that goes into
your head?
You're
going to piss him off. His plugs are starting to loosen. I see him. You guys can't see this from the radio, but I see
him. Falling out. They're falling out.
No, but I'm being sort of jokey, but does that ever come into your mind? Not maybe now they're in their 20s, but in the beginning when they're starting to become sexually active. Did that ever make you crazy?
Oh my god!
Do you think of Kurt on your mother? What are these questions, man?
Thanks, John.
Sorry, Joe, I interrupted.
No. I don't think you can't not go there mentally, but I don't stay there very long, and I don't. They both have recently talked to my wife about certain things in that area, and my wife's not their mom, but just advice on different things and. And I love
sexual
that.
Advice.
Not like your mind is going to, but just general
relationship stuff. How did you guys? How were your parents teaching you about sex? I know Oliver's. How did that go?
We honestly grew up in an extremely open household. I mean, sex was not taboo. It was talked about.
And what do you guys? How do you talk? Do you talk to your kids yet? Oliver?
It's a weird time, man. Yes, like, I talk to my kids in the car. I'm like, do you guys know what sex is? Like, yeah. Mm. You know, okay, well, what is it? You know, and they're like, I wouldn't want to say. They're embarrassed to talk about it. But I know that they know.
Well, also, what about the fucking internet now? And like, and phones and video games?
No, I monitor that. And I'm a very open, honest parent. I tell them. I said, look, you guys, there's porn out there. I know you know what it is. I'm sure you've seen it. Have you seen it? Yes. Well, friend's phone. I said, okay. I can't stop you from doing that. I understand that this is just, it's available.
Yeah.
I said, but you got to understand that this is not the real world. This is not how it's actually done. I said, if you're lucky one day, maybe, you know, but right now, as you are.
Well, now they're aspiring to live some sort of porn life or, you know, maybe someday
I'm just saying, I said, this is like an action movie. You know, you watch an action movie and they're not real explosions. They're actors. And then this is the same thing. This isn't how it really goes down. You know, the problem is that This is
how
our kids are
being. Walk out of the room laughing when you try to sell them on that.
They probably just tune me out. They get embarrassed.
Have you done sex scenes in any movies or anything? I think it's
yeah.
just a hazard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Right. Have you shown your ass or anything?
He shows his ass to the mailman.
Right.
Yeah, I do. But I don't think I've shown my ass in a movie. Yeah, I think I have shown my ass in a movie.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Have you done sex scenes, John?
Just on Full House. Sorry.
Right.
No.
Would you ever, would you ever go full frontal? I'm being serious, yeah. meaning like yeah, if yeah. it was an amazing role, like a Michael Fassbender, you know, when he did, would you ever actually do that if it was called for?
Probably. I think so, if it was the right,
you would.
Wouldn't you?
I don't know. I'd be nervous.
If the, you know, you have to get it warm in there and everything.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Those lights. Yeah. I don't know. Look, probably not. And I probably, no. you know, who's going to ask me to do that anyway nowadays? Like, you know. wait, I was going to ask. It must be a bummer, though, to have all that porn shit out there. Like, if I was a kid and all that was available, mm-hmm. I don't know what would have happened. I'm glad
I know, I know. I mean, yeah, I mean, when we were kids, you know, we had to find the videotapes and then dub them. We would take them to my friend John's house and sit there, and they'd dub in real time. So you'd have to literally sit through the entire production to get your dub. It was much harder to deal with. Yeah. Nowadays, it's a click of a button, and you're watching things that are just so gnarly.
So I don't know what the statute of limitations is on that, but you're saying right now, Oliver, that you were pirating pornography back in the 80s?
We had this porn dealer that lived up the road who was like 5 years older than us at the time. And we only call him that because he was the one who sort of sold us these tapes. And that's how we got them, you know. So he sell us the tapes and then we dubbed them so then I could have a copy. And, you know, we were...
Dub them, meaning, you didn't do the audio. You didn't do like the sex
No,
sounds.
No, sorry. We recorded it. You know, we would right, just copy transfer. Copy, right. yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you were copying video.
It was a different...
So it was like a federal
time.
Crime.
We were doing so much better with this podcast. Like, you guys are talking about, like, let's not post that. Let's cut this out. Maybe this is a section. You guys are really good on here. I think it's a service to do it for... Us dads out there.
I know. Well, thank you, man. Well, thank you for coming on, Johnny. And we
just want to hear
it,
before he goes what it is like to work with Oliver Hudson in a scene.
Oh,
I want to hear that.
Well, I could say something funny, but he worked like me. Like, we were very off the cuff, right? And, you know, we kind of knew our lines and
yeah.
But totally. I remember everybody was. Very excited about him coming back because he was on the you were on the first season, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And everybody was so excited and they said, oh, you're gonna love this guy. And Jamie Lee, who I'd worked with a lot on there. I know you had mm-hmm. sex scenes with her, I think. She said, oh, you're just gonna love him. And he was everything that everybody said. I thought we were gonna stay friends after, but I don't recall getting a text back or whatever.
No.
I don't know if we tried, maybe, but I thought We didn't.
So, but okay, let's be friends. I'm ready to be friends.
Now we missed it.
It's
now
over.
The Oliver's hit rock bottom.
I could get something from Joe.
Yeah.
Why is it over? Yeah, you need to call Joe. He could probably give you a few pointers.
I want you to see the show, Joe, the pilot at least, and tell me.
They sent it to us, and I tried to get on this app to see the show ahead of
too.
Time.
Picks or something
our
like
producer
that.
Saw it, John, and loved it. Thought it was great. Thought you were great in it, and so I will definitely. And I feel like this is good. This is good family fare. This is good family TV. Am I right on this?
Yeah, it's family TV, but it's not full. You know, you guys would like it with your kids, Oliver. I think they're old enough, or maybe even your daughters. It's very, you know, it's Disney, but it's real. We're tackling real stories. And you know, I think the fear was, and I think, you know, before it even barely got announced, you know, somebody was writing, wow, it's a, you know, a white guy coming in and, you know, how the rock bottom is, you know, is coaching girls basketball. And it's like, that's not the show at all. Like, I mean, to me, to the coach, it is a little bit, but I mean, those girls step, they're so, it's just me and about 10 women and they're all great. And they just, they change me for the most part. They don't take any bullshit from me. They don't, and right away they just stand up to me. And it's a very good positive female show with mm-hmm. you know, big dummy in the middle of it.
I coached my kids in basketball as they grew up, and it was some of the most rewarding and some of the most frustrating experiences of my life. And it was great, but my girls did not like the fact that if I was going to yell at somebody on the court for messing up, it was always them. But they were my kids, so I couldn't yell at somebody else's kid. But getting in there and teaching, and I mean, I see that being something so rewarding. And I would imagine for you, John, working with these young women, you know, you've always kind of been surrounded by that. And I feel like you always kind of leave these projects, and this is me guessing, but with a nice relationship with these people.
I do. Yeah. I mean, this show, most of the girls, we have Yvette Nicole Brown plays the principal. And, I don't know if you guys know her. She's fantastic. And Jesselyn Gilsig, who's done a lot. So we're the kind of the three adults. And this guy named Richard Robichaud. But it's all, the rest are teenage, you know, they're all 18, 19, 20. And, you know, obviously, you know, the first couple episodes, and I've never done this, because I come on as a real prick. And I didn't talk to them, and I forced myself to not joke around with the crew. And Oliver, you know how that, I mean, mm-hmm. that's, you know, we, that's
how
fun we work.
About being, that's what's fun about yeah. being on set. Yeah.
It was so hard, but I think it paid off. But yes, I, you know, you learn from these kids too a lot.
But are these girls of an age? Cause I've been around Saget. I went to a Saget show in St. Louis. Yeah. And these kids that he did a college show at Washington University, and to see their jaws hit the ground when he does his act, because they're picturing him. These are kids that grew up on him, you know, as one of the stars of Full House, and now his material is definitely not Full House. Were you acting alongside young women who knew you from that show, and then you're trying to break that down, or was that even in play here?
No, I'm not. I mean, that was Saget's gig, you know, and nowadays that's, you know, that stuff doesn't fly even if you are Saget. It's just, it's not the time for any of that stuff. No, they weren't. No, it was none of that. I mean, every once in a while, you'll hear Uncle Jesse. Yeah, that kind of thing, you know, but they try to keep it cool. They're very sweet, sophisticated girls, and cool. I respect them. And,
you know. Let me ask you a question. Are you satisfied with your career? Like, are there things that you wish you did or want to do? And I only ask this because I look at what I've done, and I'm 44 years old, and I'm so grateful for the career that I've had and the money that I've made and the opportunities and the people that I've met, okay? But I have yet to do something, honestly, personally, that I can look back on and be like, that fucking fulfilled me creatively. That got me. That I was able to do something that really has sort of, you know, I can look back on and really respect that I have done that. You know, is there anything, are you satisfied?
What do you know what that looks like to you? Is it, I'll give you my answer, but I mean, for you, like, what is that for you? Do you see it? Can you visualize it?
Yeah, I mean, probably just to get a little bit more personal in my work, doing things that really mean something to me, or playing a role that I can really dig into that matters to me. I haven't had that opportunity, and I haven't created it for myself yet. Right. So that's probably what it would be for me. I've done fun things, there's no doubt. But
showing your dick.
Yeah, showing my dick.
Full frontal.
Exactly.
You know, like, I don't think we're supposed to be totally satisfied, right? I mean, coming out
you're
of Full
perceived
House,
as a certain person, right? Do you want to ever break that mold and be like, all right, wait a minute, I can play this dark ass character that can really fuck with people's minds,
right? You can't try too hard, because then it looks like that. When I was on Full House, I was like doing these TV movies where I was playing, you know, a rapist and a killer. Like, I tied up Joanna Kearns in some movie, mm-hmm. and I tried, you know, but it just wasn't the right thing. You know, talking about father, when my dad, you know, he died pretty early. And then I just started gravitating towards father figures. Like, Jack Klugman was one of my first ones. I worked with him on a sitcom before Full House. And then I did Full House. And it was, you know, at the end of it, I was like, shit, I want to be an actor. And that's kind of not what people are thinking of me now. What do I do? He's like, go to the theater. Mm-hmm. And I went to, you know, and again, like, I really didn't do much theater. I can't sing. I still am not a good singer. And I auditioned to replace Matthew Broderick in How to Succeed in Business. And he just won a Tony Award. But again, I was a dumb blind. I was like, okay, I'll just do some dance lessons. I'll work on it. And I got it. And then, so I've done a few theaters. I did Cabaret, which was maybe the most fulfilling. I worked with James Earl Jones on Broadway. Cool. But then nobody sees it, you know. I know what you're saying. I mean, I've had moments of it, but then you get it. You go, okay, man, I just got standing ovations every night on Broadway next to James Earl Jones, you know. And then you go, okay, what's next? You know.
Yeah.
But people do see you as me as one thing, and it doesn't bother me anymore. I used to stress about it, but the new show, everybody's saying like, oh my God, people are going to be so tripped out by seeing you, so different. And I guess I'm like a yell, you know, the guy's angry and he's yelling, and it's kind of, you know, I'm really doing my dad in a lot of it, but.
Are you really?
Yeah, I find myself doing him and my pointing like he used to. And my dad was, he could be very gruff. He was he had the heart of a lamb, but he roared like a lion, my mom would say.
And is that a conscious decision to say, I'm going to infuse some of my dad into this guy?
No, it just comes out.
Interesting. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So when did your dad die? How old were you when your dad died?
I was, he died, he was only 65. I was in my mid-30s. And it was the worst ever. I'd always feared, I'd always had that fear of losing my parents. I don't know if you guys had that, and that stupid fear. And I remember talking to Helen Hunt, oddly enough, at some bar, and she before he passed away, and it was the night before he did, and she said, "You ever go to therapy?" I'm like, "Nah." The only thing I'd talk about was my fear of my parents dying, and that's stupid. He'd tell me like they're still alive, enjoy them while they're here. The next day, my dad gets a heart attack in Vegas, and he was in a coma for 6 months. I blame Helen Hunt for most of it.
Had you not talked to her?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So that, I mean, gosh, man, I, why do you think you feared your parents dying? Like, what is that?
Well, because I just loved them so much. And at that point I really didn't have much death around me. I just had a fear of losing them, and now they're both gone. But I gravitated towards, you know, like I said, Jack and Gary Marshall was a father figure to me. And Don Rickles, God bless him, his wife just died. It just, you know, you got to hold on to the moments, right? And this sounds corny and cheesy, but it's like, you just got to be here right now and, you know, enjoy your family, enjoy your friends.
But you have to be guilty of what I'm guilty of, which, and I've talked about it on this podcast before, now being 52, basically your old dad, doing math and going, oh man, when they graduate high school, I'm going to be hopefully this, you know, I'm going to be this old when they graduate college. Am I going to be around for when they get married? Am I going to be around for somebody who, and I'm the same as you, I always feared my parents dying.
Yeah.
And my dad, who was laying in an intensive care unit for basically 7 months, you know, and then eventually degraded to the point where he was begging me to let him die, having conversations that you never thought you would have and you only see in movies. And all of a sudden I'm having that with my father. You know, it does give you a deeper understanding of what's going on and how you do have to hold these moments, you know, as dear as you can. And so don't waste any time. And that's what he told me. When you get to this point, it's too late. Build your house, have your fun, live your life, enjoy it. Because when you get to this point, it's too late. And I sometimes still have a tough time remembering that.
Do you write your kids notes or letters, you guys?
My daughters, yes. My kids, my boys, my little boys, I have not done that yet. And I definitely need to.
Oliver, I do. I do. I write them little things.
My mom wrote a ton of notes and left them all over the place. And whenever I needed to find them, I think I found all of them now. But at the lowest point when she died, I opened a drawer. Well, both my parents. My dad, I'm looking at it right now. My dad, I'm going to grab this because this is what you guys like. My dad came over. I was shooting a movie in Yugoslavia. And my dad came over and he flew home and I was still there. And he wrote this note and faxed it to me. And I got the fax and, you know. And then I think it was about 15 years later, he was dying. He was in a coma for 6 months, doing a bad thing. And I found this, let me grab it. I found this letter. I was rummaging through his stuff. And You'd think I'd memorize it, but I don't. I don't memorize for free.
I don't memorize when I get paid. That's my problem.
I was rummaging through his drawers, and he was a very simple man. He drove the same car. He had an El Camino, and he would just put a new engine in it every 5 years. Love very El frugal. Caminos. But then, you know, sent my daughters to my sisters to a great college, and you know, and my mom was taken care of. But I was rummaging through it. He had a crappy old watch. And then I saw the bottom of this letter. It said, thanks, I love you, Dad. I was like, what the fuck is that? Because I forgot about the letter that he sent me to during that time. And by the way, this is a great ending for the podcast.
No, I love this. I'm already feel emotional.
Well, he says, dear Jay, and he didn't write a lot. You know, dads don't, you know, he had this kind of writing. I'm trying. He says, dear Jay, first I want to thank you for the opportunity to have a great trip and a view of Europe. Without you, we surely wouldn't have done it. B, you made me so proud those 3 weeks that my chest is about 60 inches. Your hard work and your handling of all the people around you is fantastic. You are truly head and shoulders above everyone there. C, life isn't very long and a man doesn't have many great moments, but you have given me many. Thanks. I love you, Dad. There you go. Well,
Jesus Christ, man. Wow.
So
it's so beautiful. And it's so it's funny when you frame something like you frame that and you have that, sometimes you still take it for granted. Do you ever stop and reread that? Like when's the last time you read that word right for now, word like you just did? Yeah, I know. Prior to that.
No, I have one for my mother too, but I have them up on the wall and I try to look. But to be honest with you, I haven't really stopped and looked at that in a long time. And
wow, man.
And it's sort of what you know, a lot of what we're talking about. But it's life isn't very long. You don't have many great moments.
Have you read that letter since you had Billy?
Not like I just did. I don't think. No, I haven't. No. But I'm going to write him one after we get off here.
Yeah, no, that's really amazing, man, and that's inspiring me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I need to do more of that. That's cool. Yeah, because we've lost that art, by the way, just because of technology and texting and fucking emails these days. The art of actually writing a letter by hand. I mean, that needs to still exist. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, let's all do that. And
what you're going to find, John, is it switches because in my bedroom, on my way out of my bedroom, I have a wall with letters from my girls to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going through a vocal cord paralysis. And one of my, at the time, my daughter was 8 and she's pumping me up. You know, she's, she's making me feel better. And, and, you know, just letters from Father's Days and cards from, and when you get those, I mean, there is no present like that. And so, you know, it's a beautiful thing to get something like that from above, from your dad, and it's equal parts as beautiful getting it from below.
I gotta force my kids to write me more letters. I think I've got to be like, hey guys, write me something really special right now. I need more of that.
Hopefully, people listening and look at this podcast. We went from taint talk to you know, emotional.
Everybody's crying.
We've done the whole gamut.
All right, one more question. So, we asked this to everybody.
All right.
Okay, so sort of a two-parter. Something that you have taken from your father that is just a part of you that is in your DNA that you are proud of and love, that you are him. And then what is the antithesis? What is that thing that is you've just inherited that you wish that you didn't have?
You know, any good podcasters, and I consider you two very good, those questions would have been answered throughout the last hour and a half. And I feel they were. I'm not being a smart, well, I guess I'm a little bit.
I like it.
But we've covered all that, haven't we? I mean, you know, so my dad, so, you know, his sense of discipline and pride and you know, that sort of stuff. And then I wish, you know, he was very gruff and he could sound like he was really shitty, you know, and I don't think he meant it a lot of times, but he didn't know how it came out. And I find myself doing that sometimes too.
Do you feel like when you're with your kid, do you feel that your dad is in you? Do you feel like you are, he's coming out of you in a way?
The good parts of him. Yeah. I think, yeah. And more so my mom. My mom was, did your dad say I love you to you guys? Was it I love you ever?
I mean, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My dad, he would, but it was rare. And now my mom would say it every other second. My mother was very, I love you. Love, 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 I love you more. I love you. And my dad would say, God damn it. You use it too much. It's it's losing its, you know, power.
Right. Hey, this has been awesome. Thanks, John. Thank I've always guys. Been a fan, but thanks for being so open talking about all this.
Yeah, thanks, John. And I want to rekindle our relationship.
So. I would love to. I mean, yeah. I was really excited about working with you, and you were everything. And I just think you're a really cool dude. And
I think
and now
cool.
I think the same about you, Joe. And God bless you guys. And thanks for sharing your stories about your dad's. I didn't hear much of this on the 405 that I listened to. It was mainly, like I said, Ernie Borgnine talk.
No, this was great, man.
Yeah. All right, guys.
All Ernest Borgnine was my father. All right, see you. Thanks, John.
Bye, guys.
Wow. Glad he that got was... that thing off the wall.
Wow. That was amazing.
And he got Jesus. You. Eddie, you've been made to cry by Eddie Vedder and John Stamos.
I know. I love him, man. He was so fun on set and because we were very similar. I mean, he's so playful and fun, and you can tell he just loves being there. And I love how open and straight up he is when he's like, what the fuck are you asking me this question for? We just answered this in the last hour and a half.
Right.
I love that. No, that's, I like that shit. That's good.
Could there be a more youthful looking 57-year-old?
It's insane. He's like, he's still hot. I don't know. And by the way, he's shredded wheat. I mean, his body's still shredded.
Really?
Bullshit. Yes.
I just,
yes. God. Zero liposuction.
See, that's not even right either. I mean, there has to be, it's LA. There has to be some sort of reconstruction happening.
And how about that?
You don't
hair,
know that.
Dude.
You
how,
don't know that.
Of course I do. John Stamos in a fucking liposuction.
You don't know that.
Look,
you have no idea.
See, look, you right. You know, I got good hair. There's no doubt. But
yeah, but
I
it
was
starts,
even looking
it starts
at,
back. I mean,
I was
Stamos
looking at Stamos'
half ass Eddie Munster.
Stamos has got the hair, dude.
I know. It's mesmerizing. I could barely ask a question. I was just looking at it the whole time. And
know,
he plays with it so much. I can't believe
no.
every piece of hair is not falling out of his head.
Another good one. Another good one, Bucky. That was great, man. That was awesome.
Good job, Oliver. Did you get him for this podcast?
No.
How'd we get John Stamos?
I think we reached out.
That's amazing to me.
His team,
I mean,
because he's promoting his
with
show.
The guy. This just proves how little effort you put into helping book this show.
I don't have his number.
If I meet, how do you not have his number? You were acting with him. You were in a show with him.
Maybe I do have his number.
If I meet somebody in passing at an airport, I'm like, yeah, I can try to get them. You meanwhile, you've got John Stamos in your phone, and you don't text him, say, hey, come on. We have to rely on other people to get him.
I don't have John Stamos in my phone.
Yes,
Jesus
you do.
Christ.
Yes,
look,
you
I
do.
Got Eddie Vedder. Relax.
No, you didn't. No, you're bringing nothing to this dance, and you're like Captain Hollywood. You've lived in all these houses. People have...
Joe, we've talked about this. We've talked about this. Yeah, I act in Hollywood. Like, this is what I do for a profession. You know way more celebrities than I know. That is a fact. And it by tenfold. I mean, by tenfold. You know so many celebrities because a lot of people love sports and they look up to you.
Not
and they
Stamos.
Jock you. They're on your jock.
Stamos probably never heard of me before today.
He hasn't.
I still feel like we connected.
I think you did. I feel like you guys could be friends. I feel like you want to be friends with him. You know, it's, yeah, I feel like you're like a little boy in a candy shop or something.
Oh, God. You make me laugh. I will say that. You make me laugh.
Oh, and by the way, you've taken care of me once again. I've got my golf gloves have come.
Those are the only ones
you did that. I love
your
you.
Tiny
Thank
hand
you.
Size. You have little hoof feet and tiny hands. And it's right-handed because you're a left-handed golfer. The you talk about slim pickings on the old G4 website.
What size do you wear? A large glove?
I wear large, medium, large.
Yeah, I wear like a medium to medium large. I like them tight though. I like a little. I don't like loose fitting golf gloves.
No, I get it. I'm just saying. I never
right, stop
knew
making
how
fun
little.
Of my extremities. I don't need that right now.
Andy can't sweat.
Yeah, I know.
Will you please sweat? Something's going to break. Something's going to happen. And it's just, you're going to sweat. You're going to have sweat from a year ago coming out.
When I meditate now, I literally picture every pore like shooting water out of me. So I picture like literally like I am a sprinkler.
Yes.
I'm trying mind
you're
over
gonna
matter
be a puddle.
At this point.
You know what's going to be left? A hoodie, one earbud, and a hat.
Do you know what concerns me? You know what concerns me even more is that when you just said that I have small feet and hands that everyone's thinking I have a small wiener, like I can't stop thinking about that. You know?
I'm just, that, no. That
Do you think people, when you said that, are like, oh, he probably has a small ween?
Probably, like thinking, yeah.
Okay.
Well, so maybe you need to do what Stamos was talking about and fulfill your dream of doing a full frontal shot.
Way too scared. I wouldn't do it. First of all, I'd have to grow my pubic hair back out, and that would take a while.
You can get a merkin.
Okay. Well, let's just end it there, shall we, Joe?
Okay. I think nothing else need be said.
All right, buddy.
Goodbye.
See you soon.
Grow them out.
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margot Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.